The Producers, featuring the most respected international talent in the world of audio production and voiceover. Radio, TV, film, and online. In-depth interviews, industry insights, putting you on the inside. This is The Producers Podcast with Ryan Dream.
All right, welcome to it, another edition of The Producers Podcast. I'm recording the intro live today because every time I try and record the intro later, I screw it up 15 different times. I'm too particular. So I'm just going to record it live, and whatever comes out is what comes out. Coming up here, in fact, standing by on the line, the one and only George Taylor from Imgur, also Wise Buddha there in the UK. I've now known George for a couple years. I've seen him speak live twice, and honestly, after the first time, was warranted enough to get him on the show. But I pinned him down at the Imaging Days this year in Amsterdam and said, "You are coming on the show." And he said, "Yes, absolutely cool." So we're going to do that in moments. Just to give you a little preview of what's coming up on the podcast in the next month or two, you know, I will apologize. This episode's a little delayed because everybody, not George, but everybody else was like, "Yeah, yeah, I'm ready to go." And then nope. So anyway, Brian Apple, who is working up in Ireland, he is from the States, but he's doing video game sound design now. It's a really cool job. I've been trying to get him on the show for literally months. We're finally getting that one locked in. Also, you know what? I'm not going to go into too much detail, but I've got a large team of producers out of Dubai that are going to come on with me. I met a few of them at the Imaging Days, and so, you know, we did the whole networking thing, and we're going to put together an entire team interview. That might end up getting pushed out after the first of the year, as we are already in middle of November. And then finally, another person who I've chatted with a number of times, and he was kind enough to join me on a panel in Amsterdam, Mark Vickers, who's the creative director of Wise Buddha Jingles, who works alongside my guest today. So before we get to the one and only George Taylor, let's go ahead and hear a sample of the great work from George Taylor.
Across the UAE. Vancouver's best mix.
Get into the music.
Turn it up and don't turn it down.
C100.
This is Rihanna. You're listening to New York's hit music station. Z100. Let me make it clear. We play hit music here. Let me make it clear.
We play hit music here.
We play hit
music.
We play hit
music.
We play hit
music.
You control the sound of your station. Imgur.
K103.
Number one for Manchester.
I need you every day.
We've got the music. Your music.
Your life.
Yeah, go.
K103.
Epic work. I believe that I can use the word epic in an appropriate manner. George Taylor, great stuff there. I was so looking forward to having you on the show. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me. It's a real honor.
Yeah. I've now met you a couple of times, as I was kind of joking. I'm now a two-time world traveler. I've been to Europe twice now. But we'll get into your panels here in a little bit. We'll get into some of the key elements to your production, which I think makes you stand out in the industry, because there's a few things that you've taught me. But, you know, first, the particulars. You are the imaging director of Imgur, also a writer at Wise Buddha Jingles. And then as far as Twitter goes, you said, let's just go ahead and hype the Imgur Twitter, which is at IMGR. Anyway, why don't we start with imaging director of Imgur? Exactly. What does that entail?
So this is a role that I started a couple of years ago. People may or may not know, but before I was doing Imgur, I was actually at Production Vault with Real World. And so I guess production services is something I've been doing for quite a long time now. I think I'm coming up on 8 years or something like that. So it's been that long since I worked in the station. But so basically Imgur is it's kind of like it's a bit different from the other imaging services in that it's sort of like it builds the content for the station. So we put like a load of kit files into the service for them. And when we build stuff, you hit a build button and it basically creates a version for each station. But the premise is kind of the same in that we're just creating content for CHR and Hot EC stations. And so my job is to kind of figure out what we do on a weekly and a monthly and a yearly basis, and which involves a lot of listening to radio and talking to our clients and potential clients. And so my job is kind of, I guess, like a sort of creative director, if you like, coming up with ideas. And then sort of I've got a team of about four producers now, and I spend a lot of time sort of training them and getting them into the right position. And it's quite a fun gig, really.
It sounds amazing. I do love the interface. I'm going to be completely honest. When I first saw it, I tried to be honest, at least. I thought it was a little bit more gimmicky than it was, you know, just amazing production. But then you start to hear the production. And as an imaging geek, I really love it. So it went from being a little gimmicky to really being this very interesting app, you know, this imaging app that also had some stellar, you know, sounds. Talk about your team. Because I know that you guys launched this now a little while ago and you've been slowly building up. Do you have people that are specific to CHR, specific to Hot AC? Do you have all full-time producers in the building? Do you contract people around the world? Talk more specifically about who you're using.
So when we launched, it was me full-time. And then I had a couple of freelancers. And basically what we've worked out is that it's just more effective to have full-time staff. So all of my producers are now in-house. I've got three guys here, and then there's me. And then I've got a guy who's based in Hungary who's effectively full-time, but he's a freelancer, if you like, because he's not really in the office. But so they're kind of like split between the different formats. I've got, I tend to keep like one producer in charge of each format. And so they kind of look after it, and then I sort of oversee the whole thing. And we just hired another full-time guy who's going to be helping us launch our country service, which comes out next year. So we're just trying to get that right at the moment. I think that's going to be quite a hot country service and sort of fill that kind of gap in the market. Because it's kind of, when we talk to people, it sounds to be the kind of thing that people are missing at the moment. It's just a country service that is really, really CHR and really hot. So that's kind of what we're working on at the moment. But it's just picking up on your point about it being a bit gimmicky. It's interesting because the thing that I found as we've kind of gone along is that people have realised that it sort of sells itself as a customised service, but really it's quite versatile because all the work parts are there anyway. And so you get some users who sort of take it as it is in the box and put it straight on air, and you get the others who just go in and sort of take the work parts and the bits they need, which is what I'd do if I was at a station. I don't think I'd ever put anything on air that I hadn't done myself. I think a lot of people are the same.
Yeah.
And I totally understand that. And that's, I think the majority of our users kind of use the service that way and sort of just take what they need and use it for inspiration and ideas.
Now, as a direct competitor with you, which obviously most people I bring on my show, I'm going to be in some competition with, so it's all friendly, you know, running a country service. You mentioned Hot Country, which is very cool. I would suspect you probably, well, I don't want you to give away anything you don't want to, but you probably have to have at least one, if not more, Americans involved. Or do you disagree?
No, I totally agree, because I think it's such an American thing.
Yeah.
It's basically America and Canada are the only places where you have such a large amount of country stations. And if I'm being totally honest, as much as I believe in myself as a producer, I just don't know this format at all. And so, we need an American involved big time. And so that's something that we're doing at the moment, is just talking to lots and lots of different people, getting lots of feedback, and also trying to line up somebody to get involved on the American side.
Yeah.
So if anybody's interested, get in touch.
Do you, I think you had mentioned getting an American, you know, the country service is coming out next year. I remember hearing about that, and that's fine. You know, the playground has plenty of room, as they say. But
yeah.
Did what you just say mean you are actively seeking, you know, the great American country producer to come work for you?
I mean, I'm looking all the time to who's out there. And the great thing about this business is very versatile. If you can make enough of a business case for somebody getting involved, it can usually happen. And we're quite flexible here, and people listen, and everyone's got a voice. And so if I speak to the guys who control the money, then it's you can often make a case, which I think is what makes the service move along as it does, because it can constantly evolve.
Well, there's plenty of great American talent out there, so I just wanted to make sure I was not going to be plugging an opening that didn't exist. But, you know, simply email you if there's people out there that are interested in what you have going
absolutely.
On.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And voiceovers as well, which we're looking for voices at the moment as well. It's always good to hear who's out there. So, if there's any voiceovers that want to send a reel over, I'd love to hear it.
Yeah, cool. I have a demo on my site, by the way. I'm just kidding.
nice
George, is it george@imgr.com? Is that your email?
Yeah, that's the one.
Okay, great. All right, cool. Anyway, we'll bring up Imgr, I'm sure, as this conversation moves on. I do want to say, though, the app side of the service aside, I'm more like you. I'd probably be grabbing the audio bits and pieces that you put up there, but just stellar work there. Writer at Wise Buddha Jingles. So I'm assuming this means music writer. You're actually writing tracks for jingles.
Yeah. So Wise Buddha, there's five of us that kind of work as producers and writers for the jingles. I don't do that much for it, just because obviously my full-time gig is with Imgr and it takes a lot of my time. But every now and again, we do get projects that come in that I get to pitch for and work on. And it's just a little bit different, because obviously when you're creating stuff from scratch, when you're writing it, you're coming up with the whole thing. It's a different thing to do, and it's not something I do that often for Wise Buddha. But when I do, I absolutely love doing it, because it allows me to exercise a different side of my creativity, if you like. And today I was working on Bauer, who's one of our big clients over here. Just doing some top of hours for them, and I actually wrote the music for these ones, which is quite nice, because quite often the other guys write it and then I just do the post production on it. But it's a really fun gig, and if you look at Wise Buddha's client list, it's so varied. Mm-hmm. You've got Radio 2, which is kind of a lot with, I guess, adult contemporary, and then you've got stations like 538 in Holland, which is like really really in your face. And so we get to work on such a range of different clients. And what happens is the person who's most appropriate for the station gets chosen. And so I get to work on a lot of the youth format stuff. And we've got some really exciting stuff coming up next year, which I'm not allowed to talk about. But
that's all right.
It's a biggie. I can't wait. It's all good.
I know Radio 538 is a... For anybody that's not familiar with Radio 538, that's the big, you know, just massive, like you said, in-your-face CHR station network, I guess, based out of Amsterdam. They were kind of the local imaging celebs at the imaging days. You know, they kind of roll in there like they own the joint. But theirs and your sessions were two of my favorites, because it was literally, let's open up sessions and let's just slam audio around and show you to the second, you know, every single decision we made when we made this awesome imaging. So
thanks very much.
Yeah, I really can't speak highly enough about what you guys did there.
I think on the first year, if anybody who went or saw any videos afterwards, I think it's fair to say I kind of went quite deep into settings and techniques and stuff like that. And I think half of the room probably found it really boring, because I think there were some people there that probably don't sit behind Pro Tools every day, and so to understand the inner workings of a Pultec EQ probably isn't the most useful sort of thing. But yeah, I'm a massive geek, and so getting to do that sort of stuff's really really good fun. And if you stand up there on stage and you have to kind of figure out what it is you do, it kind of makes you ask questions of why you do what you do. And I've actually found there's some stuff that I've stopped doing from sort of doing those sessions, because I sit back and think, well, you spent quite a long time doing that, and I'm kind of trying to find ways to do things quicker at the moment. That's kind of my thing at the moment.
Yeah, like for example, maybe on a vocal bus, you used to use four different EQs and four different compressors, and you're starting to think, maybe I can get the sound with this setup, with, you know, one and two.
It's interesting because, like, when I moved to Wise Buddha, I'd been at Real World / Pure Tonic for about 7 years, and I had a really, really good setup there. I had Pro Tools HD, and I knew my studio really, really well. And then suddenly I left, and over here the setup was slightly different, and I've sort of slowly accumulated stuff rather than having everything to go with.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I was spending so much time trying to get the same sound that perhaps I had at Real World, or just trying to kind of get the same sound out of this system. And it's only just, I'd say, in the last few months or so, I've really, really got to understand my gear and have stopped trying to go for that sound and just sort of use my ears more. And it's been quite an interesting sort of experiment, I guess. But yeah, I'm in a much happier place as a producer at the moment in terms of sound.
That's cool. Yeah, you know what? Let's just bounce all over the place then, because I think templates are something that you can either love or hate. And I think a lot of producers have come to say, at least the ones that I respect, have come to kind of like, templates aren't really the best way to go. It's a lot better if you just have the idea, or, you know, the goal of the production, and just dive in and go. Don't be so locked into that sound you were so used to using. Templates sort of backs you into a corner, forces you to make decisions you might not otherwise make creatively.
I totally agree with that. I used to use templates all the time, but I just don't use them at all really anymore. And it's because, for example, I was working on a different client last week, and it's a different set of voiceovers anyway, so you kind of want to create something that works for those voices. But even then, like, I'd make one idea, I'd move to the next, and I didn't want it to sound like the idea before, and so I'd start that from scratch, and it might make the process a little bit slower. But I think it for me, I find it more creative, and it keeps me interested in the job. Not that I'm not interested, but you know what I mean?
I know what you mean.
So it's like you have a blank sheet of paper, and you can come up with whatever you want for this idea, and you don't have to take all the things from the old one. Now, people could argue that that's kind of a bit silly, because it makes you a lot slower. And I suspect a lot of my colleagues or former colleagues have probably torn their hair out with how slow I am sometimes. But I mean, I'll work 16-hour days if I have to, just to kind of get the sound I want. Mm-hmm. And that's what I did on Friday. I worked a really, really long shift just because I knew I had a deadline to hit, and I knew I wanted it to sound a certain way, and I didn't want it to be boring. So I may have sat in front of my computer for the whole day, but I had a really, really good time doing it, and no templates were involved.
In a day like that, I'm just curious, and I really do hope that people enjoy the demo that I played of yours, and they do respect how tight, how skilled, how detailed that your production is. But what takes you the longest to figure out or to just get done when you're producing?
I think a lot of my stuff's quite musical, and so there's a lot of layering in
definitely.
There in terms of sort of pitch and harmony and things like that. And I'm not a trained musician at all. I was a drummer, and so I didn't really need to know anything about like pitch or anything like that. So it's something that I've learned over the years, but I'm still a lot slower than, say, Ben Townsend, who works here at Wise Buddha. He's one of the writers, who knows the theory behind it. So he would always be way ahead of me, in terms of like knowing what he wanted to do musically, and it takes me a lot longer, and so a lot of my time is spent just trying to figure out exactly what it is I'm trying to do. If that makes sense. You have an idea, you hear it in your head, and then I spend a lot of time just figuring out how to do it.
It sounds like that's more related to actually producing music. I'd be more curious though in just your general, you know, imaging.
No, but this applies to imaging as well. So
okay.
If you listen to the voices that I do, there's a lot of tuning and stuff that goes on.
Yeah.
I try not to do stuff that's like is noticeably tuned, if that makes any sense. So
yes.
I don't want it to sound like a T-Pain record, or I don't want it to sound like there's just too much tuning going on. So a lot of the stuff I do is very subtle. And there's lots of like background harmonies and delays and things like that are tuned. And that's sometimes the thing that takes me the longest, because I need to work out what harmonies are going to work with the piece of music, that kind of thing. So,
and just so people are clear though, you know, we're talking about an imaging sweeper. It's not necessarily a jingle.
No.
But you, no matter what it is, you always make it musical. You'll take a voice bit, a movie clip even, whatever it is, and you're not going to just drop that over the bed, then have your voiceover, then a sweep out. You're going to You're going to make it musical, no matter what it is.
Yeah, that's it. And I think there's There's probably quite a few of us now in the industry who do it. There's like a generation of producers now who are sort of, I guess, working for a lot of the production services who kind of have this technique. I mean, a lot of the guys I used to work with, people like Ben Martz, for example, who did that amazing One Extra package. His stuff, again,
that was a cool session, by the way.
So cool, yeah. And his stuff is just like very rhythmic, but also very musical at the same time. And it's kind of, that's just the sort of thing that I'm into. And I like the idea that the ID transitions from one record to the next, and the whole thing just sounds like it fits together musically. And so I guess it's like this, my stuff is a hybrid between an imaging and a jingle. But I'm quite restricted in how I do it with Imager, for example, because we can't do any of that sort of stuff with the station name. So I can't tune the words like Amp Kiss Radio FM or anything like that. Yeah, I can't do that because I'm restricted by the service that we've got. So I do it a lot with drops and with interviews and things like that. And I'm just trying to find ways to do it more subtly, because quite often now, if I hear stuff that is heavily tuned, and some of my guys are guilty of this, and I pick them up on it sometimes, I feel like it's something that is kind of starting to die away a little bit. And so I'm just trying to find ways to do it that are a bit more subtle.
So, I mean, obviously we're talking about harmonic mixing, and that was something that I wanted to definitely touch on here. So if we can continue on that. When in your career did, you know, you might have already been doing it, but when did you figure out that, you know, A, what you were doing or what you wanted to be doing was harmonic mixing? And, you know, when did you sort of start to ultra focus on that?
I think it was, it must have been back in like 2008 or 2009. I'd been with Production Vault for maybe a year or two. And the records that were starting to get played, you were starting to hear a lot of this tuning going on in the record. Stuff like Black Eyed Peas, Boom Boom Pow, that kind of thing. And then you start to realize that you have the tools to do this on your computer. So I think I had a copy of Waves Tune Light or something like that. And you start to realize that this is a possibility. And so you start to do it that way. And I was doing a lot of imaging for Kiss back then as well. And
in London.
Kiss in London, yeah. And you could always do a lot of, you could always experiment a bit more with that format, because they were always open to stuff that was a bit more modern. And so I guess it was just a lot of experimentation. Then I started to really enjoy how that sounded. And I guess it's just evolved from there, really. And I don't think there's anything I make now that doesn't have some kind of like harmonic or musical element to it, which I can sometimes be a bit of a pain in the ass, to be honest, because like I was trying to do a simple sweeper last week and overcomplicated it, and it ended up in the bin. Like it didn't even make it to the service.
Yeah. So this is interesting. I want to get to that kind of a thing too. Those stories are cool. But harmonic mixing to me isn't something I've been, you know, widely familiar with for more than a couple years now, maybe 2 or 3 years. So was there, I mean, you talked about the records you were hearing, but was there imaging you were hearing, or do you feel like maybe you were a bit of a pioneer in that, really applying music or musicality to just standard voiced imaging was kind of a George Taylor thing?
I don't know. I don't want to take any credit for it whatsoever, but I think it was heavily influenced by because obviously when I was back in those days, it was Pure Tonic, which was in conjunction with Real World. So basically Pure Tonic provided the content, Real World sold it. In the very early days, it changed obviously as it moved along, but because we had that connection, I was listening a lot to the stuff that Real World were doing for their stations. And if they had a solo voice, for example, that was heavily tuned or was vocoded or something like that, you'd think, well, that's not a solo voice is not that much different from like the spoken voice. And so I guess I was influenced by that stuff early on.
That makes sense.
But if I think from an imaging point of view, I can't think of anything that was really on air anywhere that was doing that kind of thing. And I think Kiss and the people who are working there, and me and the guys that were working at Pure Tonic, I guess we're pioneering a little bit in that sense. And at first, a lot of people didn't like it. And I remember it used to get a bit of a bad rap. You'd often see people on forums kind of saying, oh, doesn't sound very good. And I remember standing in the reception of a well-known production company in this country, who I won't mention. And the guy who runs that was basically... Uh, uh, have, was, I was going to use the term taking the piss, but I don't think that's something that they use in
He was in
the
trashing
States.
You.
He was trashing me, yeah. and saying it sounded like a Black Eyed Peas record, which was meant to be an insult, but I took it as a massive compliment.
Yeah, because right.
Because that's what was number one at the time, and it's like, okay, well, it does sound like that, yeah.
yeah. So hey, thanks.
I think it was kind of like, it was changing, and perhaps people didn't like it at first, but you listen to radio now, it's everywhere. All over the world, in the States as well. It's big business in the States now as well. And so, yeah, I think it's probably going to be here to stay for a little longer.
Yeah, I like how you differentiated between, you know, tuned vocals or tuned elements, you know, harmonic mixing the way you do it versus things that sound tuned. I think you're right. That sound tuned part of that is what's key, because that's the part that makes it feel dated. And obviously with contemporary music, you want to feel as contemporary as you can.
I think it's always important to be in touch with what's going on, like, sort of out there in popular culture and kind of what people think about things. And I've been in the car before with friends of mine, and something's come on the radio and it's like really heavily tuned, and everyone in the car's laughing, saying, "What the fuck was that?" And it's kind of and so you have to take notes of that. It's the kind of stuff that people will laugh at if it's too over the top.
Yeah.
So you don't want to become a parody of yourself. You want to find a way to do it creatively. And I guess you have to talk about what the purpose of it is. And for me, it's you're making imaging for CHR stations or Hot EC stations. I want it to sound like it fits with the music. And so I'll find ways to make it musical so that you get like nice transitions and stuff like that. So there's a purpose to doing it. And also as well, I believe that because imaging is about messages and sort of communicating a message to your audience, that if something has a melody or a rhythm, it's much easier to stick in someone's head. And I guess that's one of our goals, really, isn't it? To make sure people know what they're listening to.
Okay, my next question is going to be about some of the tools you used. I haven't said this yet. I'm holding in my hand now my printed out Camelot wheel. do you have this memorized before we really get into what it is? Do you have this memorized?
No, but the theory is, isn't it always, it's relative major minor, which is always, I think it's three, isn't it three notes up or, I always forget it's three notes up or down, so no, I've got mixed in key on my computer and I use it all the time.
Okay, so let's start there. So my next question on this topic, I had a feeling that I would keep our conversation really in the harmonic mixing side of the world today. You mentioned a lot of tools at the imaging days. A lot of people did. But for right now, for our listeners, let's assume A, they weren't there, and B, that, you know, really incorporating harmonic mixing isn't something they've done yet. So what are some tools that people can get or resources they can acquire that will really show them the way in this world?
What's the things that they can use to create this kind of sound?
Yeah. Yeah, like, I mean, obviously, if you have a great ear, you just know you're going to tune down something X amount of semitones and you're going to get where you need to be, blah, blah, blah. But what are some other things you can use to make it a little easier?
Well, I mean, mixed in key is really good as a first port of call, because if you put all your playlist in there, for example, it will tell you what key it's in. Quite often it's perfect. Sometimes it gets it wrong, but it's usually spot on. Mm-hmm. And you get like a little keyboard that comes with it as well. And so if you can start to realize when something sounds like it's in like C minor, or, you know, if it's in C major or something like that, then it's going to help you hear when you're doing your imaging what you should be listening out for. And so, that's a really, really powerful tool. I mean, the thing is, I can do it without that. I can do it with using a piano, and I've been able to, and I've did that way before mixed in key was available, but it gets the job done quicker. And I'm not trying to prove anything to anybody, so I'm more than happy to use tools that just kind of really help you get there a lot quicker.
Now, if you have no musical background whatsoever, you get this program mixed in key. All you know is you want your imaging to sound a lot more musical, like some of the stuff George Taylor is doing. So, if you know, again, no musical background, you got mixed in key. Is that it? You just start going, or what are you paying attention to? What are the things you need to be thinking about when you want to get more musical?
Well, I think that's a really good question. It's a good question. I mean, I guess if you want your stuff to sound that way, you start experimenting, don't you, with what you can do with it. But I think if you can start to understand like keys and notes and maybe even chords to a basic level, and rhythm as well, rhythm's really important, then I think it starts to help you formulate in your head how you can put this stuff together. So you might hear, for example, that the kick always goes on the downbeat and the snare on the offbeat, and like things like that. It's kind of, it's just sort of trying to listen to music and how it's put together, and like listening out for layers as well, listening to where the bass guitar sits and where the like where the piano is and the voice and things like that. It all helps when you're trying to do this kind of harmonic imaging, because the process is pretty much the same. Like, I write music as well, for commercial reasons and also just for my own personal stuff. And it's kind of, when you start to make music, you start to realize it's so similar to imaging in the way you build up the layers.
Yeah. I guess I was wondering if you would bring up, for example, I brought up the Camelot system, the Camelot wheel, you know, so I got into that a few years ago, and I got mixed in key, and I started to try and pay attention to those things. Cause it's like, when you're producing imaging, you can pay attention to tempo, which everybody talks about, you know, ending on a downbeat, making sure that when you make transitions between hooks and a promo, they kind of stay in the general tempo range and, you know, they transition on a proper beat. But, you know, next level is to make sure all the different things are in key. But, you know, if I have a song that's a 12B and a song that's a 12A, I can just mash them together and, you know, or...
Well, this is the whole thing. You need to know what you're listening out for. And it might tell you on paper that it's a 12A and a 12B.
Yeah.
But in reality, it might not always work. Like, there might be certain elements in the song that don't fit with the track that you're trying to mix it with. And so it comes back to the idea and sort of knowing what you're trying to create in the first place.
Yeah.
And if you're trying to create a beat mix that is tempo synced and key synced, you really, really need to listen to how the whole piece of music is put together. And there are some people out there who are just really, really good at this. So I've got a guy here called Kenny, who's one of our producers for Imager. He just hears it better than I do, like way better than I do. And this is why when we do all this kind of like stuff that uses acapellas and like different parts of different songs, and you put together and effectively create like a mashup, I always give that stuff to him because he's got an ear for it. And I think that's the thing. You have to, I guess, know where things fit musically and how you can transition them and put them together. So I don't think it's as simple as like seeing on a piece of paper that two things are in the same key or the same BPM. Musically, you need to kind of understand in your head how they could work together. And that's a real skill, and it takes a lot of effort.
There's no, you know, golden whatever. There's no tip that's just going to make it all just easy, few seconds and you're done. Everything's musical now. It actually is work.
Practice makes perfect. Like, just keep playing, because I'm a great believer that if you don't experiment with stuff and if you don't get it wrong a few times, you're never going to know when you've kind of got it right. And, you know, boy, have I got it wrong a lot more than I've got it right. And it continues to happen to this day.
Well, if you permit me to interrupt, I wanted to bring back up that thing that went into the rubbish bin. I remember you brought that up when I talked to you last time, that, you know, you'll spend hours on something.
That was a different piece. But
okay, great. At what point, you know, how long do you get into something before you say, all right, this didn't work, I'm throwing it away? I mean, are we talking hours, days, minutes?
Yeah, hours. Yeah. And the worst thing is you should think, you'd think that having now done this for like 12 or 13 years or however long, you'd realize that if you're spending a long time on something and it's just not happening, that it probably isn't going to happen. The stuff that I find is the best is the stuff that often falls together quickly, or stuff that it might take a long time, but you know the whole time you're doing it, you're doing what you want to be doing, rather than sitting there tearing your hair out because something's not working. And I think quite often my advice is to just step back and try and figure out what it is you're trying to do, and try to do that as soon as you possibly can, because with this particular piece that ended up on the cutting room floor, the whole way through I was thinking, is this going to work? I really wish I'd trust my instincts. And this is, I was speaking to Mark Vickers about this the other day, about trusting your instincts. Quite often, the things that I do that I know aren't right, I know they aren't right the whole way through the process. And I wish I listened to that voice in my head saying, this is a waste of time, stop doing this, move on to something else. But I never do. I guess it's the challenge of trying to get it right. But it's foolish and it never works out.
It's so funny. I think you can apply that to just about anything in life. For example, what came to mind is there's a poker phrase, think long, think wrong. You know, when you're making a decision at the poker table. It probably is true with just about anything in life, but it's obviously sounding more often than not when you're getting deep into these mixes too.
Do you ever find that you have the same problem?
Yeah. You know what surprised? I do. I think I might be in a position where I don't have as much. Well, no. Actually, I'm with you on that. I think mine happens a little more in commercial production with the writing process. I have an idea. I know where I want to get. I think ultimately the message will be great. And I think, but you spend so long trying to get there and you end up forcing it. And then especially when you end up playing what, you know, you play it for somebody and their reaction is so bad and it just crushes you because you just spent, you know, hours and you know that you can get there, but you just don't know how.
I always know when I've done something that isn't right when I'm kind of like when I play it to somebody and I don't want them to listen to it. And there's two feelings I get. I get that feeling when I know I've done something that could be amazing, or when I know I fear that I've done something really bad. It's the same feeling, and so quite often I can't differentiate between the two. And so I play something to somebody, but you can kind of gauge by their reaction whether or not it's good. But at the same time, it's subjective. Like, something might be great to one person, but not great to another.
Yeah.
And it is only radio imaging at the end of the day. So it's good. Not that it isn't the most important thing in my life, because obviously it is. But it's like, you know, no one's going to die if it's really bad.
Absolutely. I remember my first job. I was frustrated about something really stupid. And one of these, it was a talk station. One of these guys that had been on the air for like 40 years saw my frustration. He's like, hey, man, just remember, it's only radio. No one's going to die. You know, he's this old, cool Southern dude. And anyway.
He's right.
Yeah, absolutely. Some of the best advice I ever got, and I'm lucky that I got it really early because, you know, I see people that are deep into their 40s and 50s still get so frustrated over this. They get so upset, and it's like, man, you're just working in radio, you know? Don't take it so seriously. Anyway.
And also, if you get feedback from people, it's quite easy to kind of, when you've spent hours on something that you think, which obviously you put so much of yourself into, and then you get perhaps not the response you'd want.
Yeah.
I've started to now turn that into a positive thing. People are trying to give you their feedback, and obviously you can choose which feedback you take on and which feedback you don't, but it's someone's opinion, and you should listen to what everybody says, really, and it all makes us better. I think if you do actually listen and you try not to get your back at, which I used to do quite a lot. I used to be quite difficult to give feedback to, I think. Mm-hmm. But that's a mug's game.
With age and experience comes a little more acceptance that we're allowed to be flawed.
Absolutely, yeah. It's true.
You know, when you're younger, it's like, especially if you're good at what you do, you know, I can't be flawed. If I'm flawed, they'll fire me and I won't get the big job and, you know, all that.
I think there's a lot of truth in that as well, because I had I've been doing this since the age of about 16, and my career sort of took quite a sharp rise, I guess, and I took it so seriously, and I think it wasn't until sort of the last days of being at Real World, and then sort of afterwards, when I had a little period out, that I started to reflect on the whole thing and think, just stop taking it so seriously and enjoy it, because you know, I was getting stressed out big time. Because I didn't think I was as creative as I was a few years before. I wasn't quite happy with what I was doing. And, you know, that lasted for quite a long time. And it's only been in the last year to 18 months where I've started to really enjoy the job again, because I just don't get bogged down with stuff like that anymore. It's pointless.
It's so weird how that works. I mean, it's obviously age, although you are still relatively young. But, you know, I was going to get to this kind of in the back end of the interview, but this is a good spot as any. You already talked about your, about, what'd you say, 7 years or so with Real World?
Yeah.
You've been with Wise Buddha now for 2 years?
Yeah, two and a half years, maybe.
Two and a half years?
Yeah.
Where did you start, and what was the really big leap or two early in your career? Because I know that you did have a pretty quick elevated, you know, situation there.
Yeah, so I think... when I started doing production, it was kind of I sort of fell into it by accident because I wanted to be a jock.
Yeah.
I was working for, it was the GWR network at the time, which is now Global Radio over here.
Mm-hmm.
And I was working at one of the smaller stations, and there's a guy called Link Kelly, who I think he works for the SCA network in Australia now. He did take a period out, but he was the head of production for that group, and he obviously saw something in me and gave me the opportunity to go to LA for, you know, the Dan O'Day production summits.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Don't know if, do they still take place?
I haven't paid a ton of attention to those for other reasons, but I think there's something involved. I mean, there's emails that go out. Anyway, go on.
from what I remember, back in those days, which would have been 2003, 2004,
yeah.
That was like the thing to go to if you wanted to sort of better your career, I guess. And he saw something in me, and I got taken there as a trip, which at the age of 17 is the most amazing thing in the world. It's kind of like, wow, I can't believe I'm going to America on a company trip. Like, I'd never imagined anything like that could happen. And I think Dave Fox was talking at that seminar, and he was doing his, I think it was his imaging toolkit.
Yeah, Swiss Army knife thing?
Yeah, the Swiss Army knife thing. And, you know, that I got so much out of that so early. And I think that sparked something in me. And obviously, I found out about Dave leaving Z100 on Friday, last week.
Yeah.
And, I sent him a message saying, you have no idea like how much you influenced what I wanted to do as a job. Because back in those days, I didn't know if I didn't have the imaging bug, if you like.
Yeah.
And I think that sparked something in me. And then just everything took off from there, really. Went to go and work for the biggest station in the network. And then went to go and work with Steve Pygott at Pure Tonic.
What was the biggest station in the network that you went to work for?
So that was Trent FM, which is now Capital Nottingham. The radio over here is like stations have changed ownership, and like some have gone with one network, some have gone with another. But Trent, back in the GWR days, was like their sort of big kind of station. I had like the biggest breakfast show. They always won like Sony awards and things like that. So that was a big gig to get first, because I was only 18 or 19 when I went to go and work there. And and then I applied to go and work with Steve at Pure Tonic, and then things just went boom from there, because suddenly you're working for Kiss, you're doing stuff for Production Vault, which has obviously been aired on lots of stations in the US, and then when Pure Tonic merged with Real World, the opportunities sort of grew from there. And then Pure Tonic were really big over here as well, so I did stuff for like Radio 1, One Extra, XFM, Kiss obviously, and so I got to work with all these really, really big clients quite young. And we merged with Real World, and then I just spent all my time doing Production Vault. And I think that's when things changed a little bit. I think I got a little bit disheartened by the job, and that's not anybody's fault at all. It's just when you are day in, day out doing imaging for CHR stations, you just need to mix it up a little bit. And that's what I'm very fortunate to be able to do here by sort of having two roles. And it's really nice.
So you were in the actual radio station environment for a short period of time, very early. I don't even know if you were there long enough to miss it, but do you miss being in an actual station on a day-to-day basis at all?
Yeah, of course. Like, that's why we do what we do, isn't it, really? It's kind of the radio bug will always be there. And, I mean, I still listen to radio all the time. I still love it as a medium. And I'd love to go back into a station one day, but I don't know if it would be as an imaging producer. Do you know what I mean? It's kind of I probably want to go back in as a show producer, or dare I say it, even go back behind the microphone, but probably on a talk. I probably want to do a talk station rather than like a music station, and I'm talking like way into the future here. I really miss being in a station, but not enough to want to stop doing what I'm doing, because more than being in a station, I much prefer being in a studio in front of a pair of speakers and just mucking around for a week, which is what we get to do.
I actually had this written down. You brought it up first. Dave Fox leaving after 29 years, Z100. And I actually, you know, I know that there's different relationships over there, so I don't know if you're pals with him at all or not, but he's a good friend of mine. Chris Nickel, Capital.
Yeah, me and Chris are really close, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Good. He's announced his, maybe it's real, maybe it's not, but it seems like producers or creative talent in the UK tend to be at a job for a lot less time than those in the U.S. While people in the U.S. still get fired or get laid off or whatever, if you're good and you're at your big job here, it seems like if you want, you can keep it for 10, 20, 30 years.
Yeah.
Whereas over there, I see the big names bouncing in and out a lot faster. Is this true? And if it is, can you shed some light on why?
Do you know, it must be because the only person I can think of off the top of my head who's been working for a station for a long period of time is Matt Fisher. He's been at Radio 1 for 10 years now.
Yep, I was going to say, he would be the only one I can think of that's double digits over there.
And, I mean, he, again, Matt's a good mate of mine, and he absolutely loves it there. Because he's got the opportunity to reinvent himself all the time. Because a station like Radio 1, you have to reinvent yourself.
Yeah.
And they quite often just rip people out, put new people in. Nobody knows that better than our director, Mark Goodyear, because he was there for a long time and suddenly he wasn't the new wave of jocks that they wanted on air. So he was kind of put out. But it's the way it goes. Radio 1 is a station that constantly evolves and constantly moves. Mm-hmm. And the fact that Matt has been able to stay there for so long is a testament to him as a producer. But also, I think being able to reinvent yourself that often keeps the job interesting, whereas perhaps that maybe isn't the case at other stations. I don't know. Or maybe it's because the industry is just a bit smaller over here, and there's kind of everybody knows each other, and opportunities come up, and like you think, well, maybe I'd like to go to that place, and it seems to be a lot more fluid. It's the same with Ireland. I think Ireland is quite a similar market as well. People tend to move around quite a lot within that market on quite a short rotation. But what do you reckon the average is then in the States for imaging guys to stay in their gig?
You know what? I think that sadly over the last, since 07-ish, 08, that we've lost a lot of the high profile jobs.
Mm.
We don't put as much emphasis into the imaging and actually having high paid, high profile producers at the station level, as not as much as the UK does. But I think that the ones that have stayed, you're talking, I mean, you know, 10 to 15 years, of the big ones. You know, heck, I did almost 7 at KSCS, and I would probably still be there. I mean, I'd be going into my 10th year now. And I just think that for some reason in the States, that maybe it's the mentality. I'm not really sure what it is. But when you get into a place that you like, you're more willing to stay than you are in the UK for whatever reason. I don't know.
I don't know why that would be. But I think maybe it comes down to like the actual job itself. And I think radio over here is quite cutthroat. There's a lot of emphasis on RAJARs, which is our system for monitoring listening figures and stuff like that. And, you know, if a station is having a particularly bad period, people will get cut and it can be quite brutal. And perhaps that has something to do with why people kind of move around a bit more quickly.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, if you look at Wise Buddha as a company, all the people that write for us have been doing it since the day they started writing for us, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
So the turnover of staff here is, it just doesn't happen.
Yeah.
And I've been here for two and a half years, and we've only ever hired people, and nobody has left on the creative side. And I think it's pretty quite similar with when I was at Real World as well. Like a lot of the people who there to do the creative jobs, they stick around for a long time because they're good places to work. And the opportunity, you get a lot of opportunity and a lot of chance to do different things and change and evolve. And I think maybe the production companies retain staff a bit quicker, but but the station's just a bit more cutthroat. How do you think imaging has changed in America over the last 10 years?
I guess if I try to always be honest, I would say it's definitely gotten worse. I would say the quality isn't what it was, but that's not because the talent is worse. It's because the time is not being spent on it as it is in Australia and the UK. Those are the two big ones that I would point out. Although I didn't know anything about Belgium radio before I met Stephen Lemons, and hearing what they do there just at his outlets. Wow. You know, so anyway, the US is, you know, relying a lot more on the services, relying a lot more on, you know, one person for 10 stations, as opposed to maybe 5 for a network of 10 or 20, you know?
This is the thing I find when I speak to a lot of people stateside, a lot of their challenges are that they have to deal with so many stations.
Yeah.
And it's such a shame because, I mean, radio is still making a lot of money. And so the money must still be there. But it just doesn't seem to, people just don't seem to see imaging as being something worth investing in, maybe. I don't think that's true of all stations, but I do think a lot of people look at how things look on a spreadsheet and they think, well, we can cut that down.
Yeah, especially if you have to cut. You know, if you've been told by corporate that, you know, you have to reduce 5% expenditures and, well, you know, we've already cut, you know, we only have one live jock left, that's mornings, so we have to keep them. The sales staff is down to nothing. We have a program director for four stations, you know, and we've got this producer. I guess we have to cut the producer, you know.
I think it's why the production services is such a lucrative business now, because because they allow producers to, I guess, keep the quality up but the time down. And I guess obviously that's a good thing for the people who work for the production services, and hopefully it's still a good thing for radio. But at the same time, it probably means that a lot of people have maybe stopped doing imaging to the same level that they used to because they don't have to, or because, like you say, they just simply don't have the time, and that's really sad.
Yeah, yeah. I've talked about this, which is kind of where we were going here. I've brought it up with a lot of different people that I've talked to from services of various types. And yeah, I mean, for sure, if a station is willing to give up the inventory, then they can still have great imaging. But that's kind of where it's gone. It's, you know, you're no longer giving up the salary to get the great producer. It's turning more of give up the inventory to get the great service. Yeah. And as the services get a lot more custom, which is why Imager is great, because it's kind of, it's definitely a hybrid. It's not fully customized imaging like maybe a mix group is offering.
No.
It's an app which still lets people get in there and feel like they're customizing it. But really, at the end of the day, you just have to be able to slide bars around, right? And then you can get your produced imaging.
And I still think as well that it's becoming quite a saturated market, maybe. But there's still space for everybody to exist.
Yeah.
And all the services are slightly different. They offer something a little bit different, and the thing we're finding is that people just like it's the same in the way you might eat a packet of chips. Like, people like a different flavor, so they're gonna buy that. And it's kind of, I think there's enough room for all of us to be, and you know, all these people are my friends as well. It's like,
yes,
for me personally, there's no rivalry. Obviously, there's others from a business point of view. You want the thing you're working on to succeed, but from a personal and a creative point of view, I mean, I still listen to what Andy does for Production Vault, and I'm constantly wowed by it. And the same with the guys at Imaging Blueprint. Adam and Tom are really good friends of mine.
Yes.
And I think what they do is absolutely amazing. And the service they offer is different to the service we offer. But it's kind of, you work for your clients and you get it right for the people that that like your flavor of chips, I guess. And that's kind of, I think it's been quite interesting working on now for two different services, seeing how the businesses operate differently and the kind of people you talk to and what people want. And it's really interesting, but there's enough space, which is good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is actually becoming a really great place to sort of wrap things up here. George, thank you so much for your time. I'm gonna ask you my final question in a minute, but on Twitter at IMGR at Imager. I also go to imager.com, IMGR.com. There's plenty of demos there. They you guys put out pretty much monthly scopes, right?
That's correct. Yeah. Check out our SoundCloud.
Okay.
It's, SoundCloud.com/imager. CHR Hot AC, I think it is. Yeah, we just search Imager on there.
I was going to say, the SoundCloud, I actually do a lot of work for them, and they're, I love that platform, and they are very easy to search, and I think I've shared some Imager stuff on my profile too. So,
nice.
In 2016, we're going to see multiple country services coming from UK-based production houses, services, library, whatever word I'm looking for, you know, you. Like I said, I really, you know, being a guy who runs a country service, although mine is definitely way more jingle-based and music-based, I'm really interested to see what you guys do. I'm really looking forward to that.
So am I. And to be honest with you, at the moment, we're still experimenting, and we're doing we've got some people that sort of, I guess, beta testing the audio for us, and we're just doing lots of consulting, and we really want to get this one right.
Yeah.
And just make sure that it fits in the gap that is available in the market, rather than just create a service that other people are doing, because there's such a wide range of stuff that's out there. It'd be foolish of us to try and fit on the same part of the spectrum as other people. So we're going to look for our little niche, and I can't wait for it to come out next year.
Yeah, absolutely. Good luck with that. Although I'll destroy you in every market I can.
It's on.
It's on. Yeah, fight in the square, town square. Let's wrap it up, though. You started in the ballpark of, would you say, 15 to 17, somewhere in there?
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
You know, if you could look back at yourself even, what's the one thing you would say to, 17-year-old you to be successful, the advice you would give to be successful in this field?
That's a really good question.
Thank you.
Learn time management, which is something I still haven't done. But yeah. I often see a lot of people around me who have this down to a T, and they do really well, both financially and kind of in where they stand in the industry. And I think it's often something that lets me down. And I wish I'd got my head around it when I was younger, because I've picked up a lot of bad habits. Mm-hmm. And so if you are young and you're listening to this now, sort your shit out. That's my advice.
Hey, that's a great place to end. George Taylor, everyone. George, one more time, thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks, man. I really appreciate it.
Contact the show, contribute your opinions, see additional content, or simply stay connected at producerspodcast.com.